It's gonna be a football game tonight, now.
No doubt.
It's gonna be a football game.
Here.
Okay.
I done been here.
All right, let's go, baby. Hey.
Play clock at 5.
Hello and welcome to another Football to Football after we took our week off for the Super Bowl. We are back and ready to talk about this huge offseason that is before us. We're about like a month away or a little bit less than that from free agency. And then, you know, we'll be getting into the draft and all that stuff. God, it feels like this NFL thing just never ends. But guys, I mean, it's been a week, a little bit more than a week, been 8 days. How's everything been going?
Good, man. Yeah, you know, just doing the same old same, you know, getting through work and everything, and just had a great, you know, weekend this past weekend, enjoying Valentine's Day, and I did a few things, went and saw Deadpool, and that was a lot of fun. So, yeah, just kind of chilling out, man.
How was Deadpool?
I loved it. It's just right up my alley, and well, I'll be honest with you, Sean. You live with Deadpool for a short term, so you know who he is.
Yes, I did. We all did.
me and Sean had a college roommate who, after I saw the film, I'm like, dude, I just felt like I hung out with our friend Kevin for like an hour and a half.
Exactly. So how'd it go for you, Randy?
It's going good. You know, I've been just trying to figure out why everyone's making a big deal about Aaron Gordon. You know, I've been jumping over our mascot and having slam dunks all the time. Wasn't a big deal.
Randy's mad skills are awesome. You guys need to look on YouTube.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, so, I mean, my we did our Valentine's not on Valentine's Day, so I just was watching wrestling and other things on Valentine's, and I had to do two podcasts on Valentine's Day, so nothing out of the ordinary for me. So, you know, there isn't a whole lot. I mean, not that, let's be honest, when I said we took the week off, apparently we all kind of took the week off, seems like. The really big thing that's kind of been going on is this really old news, but they've made it new again with this Title IX stuff with Tennessee, and that apparently Tennessee allows for this sexual misconduct, sexual assaults to happen, and they have named Peyton Manning in it because he apparently has some history at Tennessee of foul play happening. I mean, this story has kind of just been going bonkers on the radio and, you know, especially on the internet and all that stuff. I mean, what are your takes on this?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the press wants Peyton Manning to retire so bad that they're pulling up stories from 30 years ago. It's, I mean, I guess it was 20 years ago, but still, I'm not saying it wasn't a big deal, but it kind of just shows how the media has changed in the last 20 years, that if something like this would have happened nowadays, it becomes this huge thing, it becomes a college scandal. 20 years ago, it gets shoved under the rug. Yeah, the college just tries to do everything they can not to lose their star quarterback and make everyone happy, and then all these other reports start coming out about the things that have happened since then and whatever. It's one of those weird things where it's an interesting story, but it's so long ago that it's like, okay, so what's the point now? I mean, are we really going to sit here 5 years from now and go, well, you know, I really thought Peyton Manning was a first ballot Hall of Famer, but, you know, that one time when he was a college kid, he did a really stupid thing, and we found out about it 20 years later, so now I don't know. He might not be a good guy after all. It makes no sense. I mean, as a college kid, he did something stupid. I mean, we talk about it all the time with other stupid college kids doing retarded things. Hopefully they learned from it and matured. It seems like Peyton Manning has, so why make it a big deal?
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, once you get out of college, I mean, honestly, if Jameis Winston goes on to have a heck of a career, are we really going to be talking about the stupid stuff he did in college? I mean, that was reported on and was a big deal. And now it's even more swept under the rug because he had a pretty damn good first year. You know, if he had sucked this first year, or even had the injury plague season that Marcus Mariota had, where his team didn't do well or whatever, maybe they're still talking about that kind of stuff in relation to his conduct and whatever, but it's just, I think this is more of a shock to people because of Peyton Manning, who he is, all the things that people have thought of him for, you know, having the squeaky, you know, clean image and all that stuff. What do you see from it here, Gary?
You know, it is kind of funny that, you know, like Randy said, 20 years ago this happened. And we're hearing about it more and more. And honestly, this is the first time a lot of people have heard of it. I mean, honestly, that was the first I had heard of it this week. And, you know, it's a big deal to an instance because this never needs to really happen. But at the same time, you got to go with the people that was involved and the way it was involved. And it's a locker room thing. You always hear that. I know it sounds like an excuse, but let's be honest. The locker room is a certain area where I think these players feel comfortable. They feel comfortable with the coaches. They feel comfortable with each other. They feel comfortable with their trainers, and which she was a trainer. And this was something dumb. This was something that should have never happened. I want to preface my thoughts by that. It never should have happened. But, you know, different mindset, and it was a young mistake he made. At the time, he thought it was hilarious. His teammates probably thought it was hilarious. I think she probably didn't appreciate it, and we find out she didn't appreciate it because of what she took action, and she did. And she did get paid for it, and rightfully so. You know, it is somehow, some way, you know, it needed to be taken care of. And I feel like justification was sent and put there in place. So now that it's coming up, it's like, guys, that was taken care of. Why are we still doing this? And I get it. There are other grievances out there which brought this up. You know, that's understandable. But I don't feel like this would be in a lawsuit again. I think, you know, with all their history, I think both parties need to kind of get away from each other and say, look, it happened. Let's move on. It just seems like both parties want to keep this in the limelight. I don't understand it at all, especially Peyton. That guy's going to retire. Go on. Live the rest of your life. Forget about this chick.
Yeah, I mean, just this is so weird. Like, just let it go. Maybe he wants his name cleared or whatever it is, and I can kind of understand that part a little bit. But just, you've already said in your book you did it. There's really not a whole lot else you're going to do about it. Now he's being named in this Title IX thing, which is a serious thing because they got allegations against Tennessee saying that, you know, these women are saying that apparently Tennessee does things that allows for terrible conduct to happen. And if that's true, then, you know, obviously people are going to get fired and there's going to be some big time ramifications for this. I mean, what do we really see happening out of this at all?
I don't see anything. Peyton Manning still hasn't even commented on the thing. Whether he thinks it's a big deal or he just doesn't know like what the politically correct thing is supposed to happen here. I think he wants to see it just go away. I'm sure she wants to see it just kind of go away at this point too. I think more of this is just a media thing. It's one of those things where, you know, he has had such a career where he looks so squeaky clean, and then he had this HGH, you know, he was in that report with Al Jazeera or whatever. So then people start digging. They're like, okay, well, Lance Armstrong was squeaky clean, and we found out he was a douchebag, and Ryan Braun was squeaky clean, and we found out he was a douchebag. Peyton Manning has to be a douchebag. And they had to go back 20 years to find out a situation where, well, he was kind of a douchebag. But I don't get it. I would have got it 20 years ago if that was a story. And, you know, you had freshman quarterback of the Tennessee Volunteers, Peyton Manning, putting his genitalia on some girl's head. That would have been a huge story. But 20 years later, I don't see it as a big story anymore.
Yeah, and this is the kind of thing that, you know, like you said, it's right now that happens, It gets blown up. It's terrible. And it is terrible. It's bad. You shouldn't be doing that. But you got to remember, at the time, in the 90s, this whole hazing thing and all the stuff that the players did was much different than the way it is now, where basically if you do anything that hurts a player's mindset or anything of that nature, it's frowned upon immediately. And they make a big deal out of it. The media blows it up. And back then, it was a much different deal. You know? So I think we need to keep that in perspective, too. It's still a bad thing, regardless. Still a bad thing. Just, I think being honest about it, too, is another thing that's important here.
Exactly. And, you know, we can go in circles and talk about it. But, it was kind of funny as me and my wife had a discussion about this. And she was asking me how I really felt about it. And, you know, I was kind of going through a few things and kind of a few things I've already said here on the podcast. But the one thing that we kind of agreed on is this: nothing's going to come out of this. It's just going to be ended by a settlement. Something else is going to really take place. But really, honestly, at the end of the day, it's really not going to change anything. So, it's important right now, but, you know, in a few years, we'll probably forget we ever had this conversation.
Exactly. And one player that we kind of already know is going to be with a new team next year is Matt Forte, a player we kind of already talked about during the season. We knew after Jeremy Langford had done well, that he probably wouldn't be playing with the team anymore, you know. So it's not anything we didn't expect. But what do you think about it? Who do you think he might fit well with?
And your new running back for the New England Patriots is.
Oh man!
Man,
wouldn't surprise me. He's a great player, and he's great at catching the ball out of the backfield, which Tom Brady loves.
I mean, he has been having some injury issues, which they have that problem with Deion Lewis too. So,
yeah, they're no stranger to injuries, and they overcome those injuries all the time. So, I don't think they're concerned too much with that. But yeah, you're right. I mean, he has had those injuries, and that's going to bring up a lot of question marks for teams looking for his services. But on the other hand, you've got teams that are really looking for a veteran, and they're not sure in the draft they're going to trust any of these young backs. And so this would be a guy to go and maybe blow a wad of money on that you really feel comfortable with, and that's fine. But, you know, I'm really curious myself. I mean, who's going to take the chance on this guy instead of going to the draft? That's a big key.
I mean, the Patriots definitely have the ability to do it if they want to. He's so versatile. He can fit anywhere that needs a running back. I mean, especially if you're looking to win now or have something that can help you win now, you go after Matt Forte. I think if you don't, you're selling yourself short, I think. Another guy that we pretty much knew, even though they're already calling for him to go to Philadelphia because, you know, he'd play under Jim Schwartz again, is Mario Williams getting released from the Bills. And, we didn't even talk about this. Apparently, you know, LeSean McCoy likes to beat up police officers. And, I mean, like, I don't understand why immediately we go into the offseason we already got to be having all this stuff happen. Just, why?
You know, I hate to hear these kind of stories. I really do. And I don't understand, you know, the thought process of an NFL player when it comes to these activities. Because to me, my thought is, you know, hey, you know you're in the position that you're in. Keep your nose clean. Stay out of those situations. And, you know, LeSean McCoy, let's be honest, he's been a little bit of a hothead. He's definitely shown that he has some issues going on. And this is no way to prove to the Buffalo Bills or anybody else that you're worth the time.
Yeah, I heard that the two officers that he was fighting were Officer Chip and Officer Kelly. So,
oh yeah, oh boy, that would be hilarious.
Oh, man. Yeah.
And before we get too far, I mean, I joked about Matt Forte and New England. Just because I think that would be the best fit for him, whether he can fit. But I don't know what you guys think, and I hate saying it, but there's a certain team that's been to two Super Bowls in the last 3 years that just had a running back retire. Talk about a perfect fit there, too.
He would definitely work in Seattle. I mean,
you put him in the backfield with Thomas Rawls and oh man, a dump off threat for Russell Wilson, who can escape the pocket like no one else, and that would be very dangerous.
You're telling me, yeah, I totally agree with that. That is definitely a great fit, you know. So, Forte, like I said, he's very versatile. I think he fits in a lot of systems, but you know, you just named two systems that really could use his services, and not only that, they'd be pretty scary to stop.
Tom Coughlin says he is too young at 69 to retire.
You know what? I mean, to me personally, he's still got his health. He's still got his wits about him. Yeah, in a way he is, even though maybe not when you're looking at just the age. I just think that the guy still has it, and I think he could definitely help a franchise. I don't know, you know, why he hasn't been employed already, because I think if I was out there and I had a team, you know, I've already mentioned the Cleveland Browns plenty of times, that would have been my perfect hope and wish, him to go to a team like that, because I think he could build it. I think he can make it happen.
Yeah, I could definitely see him coaching one more team before he finally hangs it up. I really thought he would be a perfect fit in Philadelphia, and it just didn't kind of work out. So whether he just takes the year off and tries broadcasting or just relaxes, or I can't see Tom Coughlin as a coordinator after all this time. So
oh,
maybe
no, I can't either.
So maybe he takes the year off and fills a role after that and finds a team that'll let him come in for a 3-4 year run before he finally hangs it up.
You know what I would love to see? It would be so great to see a return to Jacksonville and to take them to glory. I think that'd be great.
That would be kind of cool. Go back to where you started.
You could actually fit there because he is pretty defensive minded, and that's really what they need right now in Jacksonville.
Well, that's what Gus Bradley was supposed to be, but you know.
Well, and to kind of defend Gus Bradley, he's only been there, 2 years? So you still got a lot of time to work through that.
Told him he better make the playoffs this year or...
Well, I agree. This is the year, I mean, once you kind of hit that 3-4 year mark, now it's okay, we've given you enough time to put the pieces in place. Now make it work. So I would almost agree with Jacksonville. This should be the year where you really see that jump up. I mean, yes, you need to have Blake Bortles stop with the mistakes, but if he is able to get the defense up to an okay level, maybe Bortles doesn't think that it's all on him, and now you have a explosive offense with a decent enough defense, and all of a sudden you're looking at a very dangerous young team in Jacksonville.
Fair enough. We forgot to talk about this during Peyton's, when we were talking about Peyton Manning, but Magic Johnson says that he will put in some money for Peyton to, whether he retires or not, to come to L.A. and play for the Rams for one season. Is Magic Johnson kind of not been paying attention to the football that's been happening, or...
Well, you have to remember, he is paying attention, and he's realizing that they're getting the Rams, who had Nick Foles as the quarterback. So he's going, well, Peyton Manning could be better than Nick Foles, right?
Yeah. He must not be paying close enough attention, because they got Case Keenum on that roster, though.
Oh, so. Here we go with the Case Keenum. I was waiting for that.
Yeah. Sometimes you got to have those. But no, I mean, I don't know, man. It's kind of funny. I could see the hope and wish, but he really must not have been watching this season, because let's be honest, that was just a struggle to watch, you know, especially a quarterback that used to have it all to play like he did sometimes last year. I was just praying and hoping he could get to the Super Bowl, and he did. man, it'd just be way too big of a task for him in LA.
Well, we've got players for the Broncos saying that Peyton should retire. So, I mean, hopefully for him, and I think for everybody else, I think I don't know. I just can't see how you come back now and hope that you have a good season after the way you ended it. You know the way it went during this season. How could it really get that much better? I mean,
not only that, though. I mean, you did some things you weren't supposed to, like shill beer, which, you know, NFL players are not allowed to do. I mean, I get it. He got his own island because he said Budweiser. But, you know, it's just, you know, something that I think he kind of wrote the whole thing on the wall of, hey, I'm retiring. I'm done, you know. So why keep hoping and wishing?
Yeah, so let's not keep hoping and trying to find other things to talk about. We probably need to get into this. We are going to start with the Denver Broncos here, since we've talked about Peyton Manning and everything else, which kind of works into our favor here. But as this is the first day that you can start assigning franchise tags as of right now, Eastern time, so we'll probably be hearing after this podcast is over, and we'll be able to kind of talk about more on Thursday when we do our next two set. Oh, I probably should explain how we're doing this. So if you didn't notice, we do have a name for these shows, and it's going to be the same name throughout the whole process of this happening. Obviously, if we get closer to the draft, it might change. We're going to be doing this for 8 weeks, two shows a week, of going through each division, two teams on each show. Today we're doing the Denver Broncos and Oakland Raiders. And basically bringing in, whether it's fans, whether it's writers, whatever it is, whoever we can find for those two teams, to talk about, you know, spend like 15, 20 minutes, you know, giving a recap of the season, talking about their team needs, talking about some of the standout players, players that they feel need to be re-signed, and then kind of giving a little bit of thought about maybe the draft or whatever. This is kind of early, so the two that we have today, they really didn't get to talk too much about, you know, who you should get in the draft or whatever, because I mean, we're really far away from it at this point. But so we're going to start with the Broncos here. Stephen Davis, who was the guy that was our Denver Broncos kind of correspondent when we did this the first time to kind of build up to the NFL season, he is here talking about his Broncos. This is about a 13-minute thing, and basically he answers all the topics that I kind of just laid out here. So here we go, Stephen Davis talking about the Denver Broncos. Okay, well, hello. We are here doing, this is our interview series on the off-season needs of all 32 teams. And as we already mentioned on the podcast, we're starting with the Denver Broncos. And with me today, you might remember him from when we did the season previews, Stephen Davis talking about his Denver Broncos. Of course, your season recap ended like every other team wants at the end with the Super Bowl win. Anything you want to say about the season?
Well, it was really exciting, and I love the ending, but I think what even overdoes the Super Bowl victory is the potential of this team with the young defense and how dominant they were. And with all due respect to Peyton Manning, you know, with how bad he played and how we were still able to finish the season. I mean, just the potential, if we could get a decent quarterback in there, and just the potential of the team overdoes the Super Bowl, because I see a dynasty maybe ahead. That's what excites me the most about the previous season and the future.
All right, fair enough. So going into this offseason now, Brock Osweiler did pretty well for himself. I mean, during the season, he had 170 completions on 275 attempts and almost 2,000 yards for the games that he played. obviously he was replaced by Peyton Manning in that last game of the season. Then, you know, Manning played for the playoffs. Whether he played well or not is not an issue. Obviously, he's thinking about what he wants to do. It seems like retirement is what he's going to do. But Brock Osweiler is an unrestricted free agent, and the Broncos have other guys that obviously are bigger, you'd say are bigger fits that they need to make sure they sign.
Right.
How do you think that they make a deal with Osweiler? Do you think he winds up going somewhere else? Because, you know, I guess you could franchise Von Miller, but you got to think of the guys you got to sign.
Really, I think this is my honest opinion. And if the startup with the beginning of last year's offseason with Kubik coming in and stuff, he was really pushing to get Tyrod Taylor. And I really think Kubik wants a mobile quarterback. With that being said, I think LA is really behind Brock Osweiler. So I really think they're going to go to the negotiations, and we're going to find out this offseason who's really making the calls, if they're going to be John Elway or if it's going to be the head coach. I really think Kubik's going to push for a mobile quarterback because that fits his offense. And Brock looked awesome when he came in and played, but I think it also showed when he struggled that to fit that scheme, they kind of need someone that can do the play action and kind of can make some time in the pocket to make some plays. And I think that's what Kubik wants, and I really think LA is behind Brock. So it's going to be a very interesting offseason. What I think is going to happen is I think that LA is going to go ahead and go with Brock, and then I think Kubik's going to bring in a mobile quarterback, maybe someone like RG3 or Colin Kaepernick or someone like that to play backup, and then, you know, Brock starts struggling, and then he has a backup plan. But I could see it going either way. I'm a big fan of Brock. I hope he gets his chance because he was really patient behind Manning the past few years.
Yeah, I mean, you'd think that they would all be – I mean, what he showed maybe wasn't the greatest, but he definitely showed he can get that offense going and everything that you wanted to. And if you give him the time, he can definitely grow as the quarterback for that team. It'll be interesting because you don't have anybody behind Brock even if you re-sign him. So that's definitely something they got to look at. Even if you bring Brock back, you got to have, as this last year showed, more than anything, you got to have a backup that can sort of play.
Right. Especially when you have a crappy O-line like Denver did this season.
So that being said, what do you think are some of your biggest offseason needs? Is it that O-line? Is it the quarterback?
Well, I think we need to get Vaughn back. And I think that if we get Vaughn back, and then the dominoes start falling. Because you need to get Vaughn back, and then you need to get a running back. Because both of our top running backs are free agents right now. Then you keep going. I mean, our middle linebacker's up. Trevathan, we really need him back. And then it just keeps falling. I think really if they were able to get back everyone they need, I don't see a big free agency. I really see in the draft that we should probably get some O-line help, you know, with Clady coming back, and then maybe we can get Mathis back. I don't know. He might have a tag, price tag that's out of our reach. But the O-line is what needs the most help. But I think before that, we need to get our guys back.
Do you think they can definitely get all of them back? I mean, you got $12 million in the cap for next year. I mean, that's – I kind of see – I don't see Vaughn taking too well to getting a franchise tag. So,
Vaughn's not that big of a diva, and you've seen in history of teams being tagged. And I really don't think Vaughn wants to play anywhere else, but – the other players is what I'm worried about. I think Vaughn will work out because I think he loves being Bronco. But the other players, I think the best scenario for the Broncos is not to get into a bidding war. And I know there's a lot of hungry teams out there looking for a quarterback and licking their chops wanting Brock. Because Brock looked really good. And I know there's a lot of teams out there that would love to have him. And the bidding war is what I'm worried about. Hopefully a lot of these players will take a discount to come back and win another Super Bowl.
But you do you think, you know, RG3 could really come back to being the way he was, or say, or even a Kaepernick for that matter, if you have to do without Brock?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say with RG3 because I think his confidence is blown. I don't know. I think if he feels that a team's coming, getting behind him and that are going to push him, and I don't know if Denver would be the right situation because everyone, you're going to split the fan base. You're going to have everyone pushing for Brock and everyone pushing for RG3. And I really think that's going to mess with his confidence. And with his confidence already so low from that whole thing that happened in Washington, met with a headache, you know, that can ruin any young guy's career, you know. And I honestly think that for this offense to work, you need someone, you don't need a Michael Vick, but you need a Jake Plumber. You need someone that can do the play action, someone that can bootleg, someone that can pull the offense. But with that, you also need a running back that can run, you know? So it's all domino. It's going to be a domino effect, really, because yes, it could work with a mobile quarterback, but then you need a running back, you know?
Right.
So, and I mean,
You definitely say that you want CJ Anderson back if you're going to have
right, yeah. Way over Hillman. I think Hillman's a great third down running back, and I think it showed when they put him in a starter that he's not a solid starter. He's a flashy guy. He's like a CJ Spiller or someone like that, someone quick and fast. But he's not. He can't put the workload on his back like CJ did. I was really disappointed when they put Hillman in there because he's flashy, but he can't carry the workload like CJ can.
So if you're looking at both of these linebackers, obviously one of them's restricted and one of them's unrestricted. If you had to pick one, Danny Trevathan or Brandon Marshall?
That's a hard one, man. They're both young guys. They're both proven. But honestly, I think the middle linebacker position is most important. So I think you have to go back and look at film because I know they were switching them around a lot. But whoever could play the middle linebacker position the best, whoever could read that run, because you need someone back there that can read the run. Because, I mean, with those shutdown corners you have and with that pass rush you have, you just need one solid linebacker. Maybe a decent second guy that can read the run, that can stop the run, because once that happens, that's when Denver shuts teams down, is with the shutdown linebackers in that pass rush. If I had to pick one, though, I would probably go with Trevathan.
What about Malik Jackson? He did a lot for you guys as far as up front, clogging the middle there. He's going to be a guy that some teams are going to come after. Is he a guy you're kind of willing to part with?
Here's my thing with that. You know, we got D-Ware, and a lot of people doubted him last offseason, and I knew it. And I think I even said in the last interview we had in the preseason that I knew he was going to have a huge season. And I think he was severely underrated because I think if you look how that team played with and without him, it was white and black. It was totally different defense with him. It's just so much more pressure on the quarterback. With that being said, a lot of times they really would only rush three guys. Sometimes, a lot of times it was four, but you just need that one guy in the middle, and they've already signed Derek Wolfe. So I'm not really worried about the middle of the line right now. I mean, you could stick someone in there every now and then when they're rushing four, but sometimes they only rush three. So, I mean, with D-Ware and Von Miller, hopefully, and then with Wolf in there, Derek Wolf, you know, he had a tremendous year when he was healthy. But I don't think Malik Jackson is an all-star. I think if he joined a Jaguars team or a Cowboys team or something like that, he could be an all-star. But I don't think – it sucks letting someone like that go, but he's not on top of my list.
Looking at the draft, have you been kind of looking at anybody that you think would work for the team at all, or somebody you want, or have you not kind of started looking at that yet?
Yeah, I've looked at it, and I've looked at three positions. O-line first, quarterback second, and then running backs third. But like I said, it's a domino effect, man. You got to wait and see how this re-signing goes before you can really look at the draft. So I've been trying to stay away from that because we got to see how the who they can re-sign and who they don't.
All right. That's a good look at everything. I think you kind of covered all the bases here. Thank you, Steven, for coming on and doing this for us. And, I mean, we'll be probably keeping in touch and getting here with you again as the season gets closer. Especially, yeah. You know, after the draft, we might do one of these with all the teams again.
Yeah. I really enjoy coming on and talking to you guys and listening and getting on the Facebook page and seeing everyone's reaction. I love what you guys are doing, and I think you're doing an awesome job.
Well, thank you, man. Until we get to do this again, have a good one.
You too, sir. Thank you.
All right. Well, that was Steven's take on what the Broncos need and some of the key players that they need to make sure they get back. Obviously, the big guy I think that Von Miller's huge, but your quarterback situation is Brock Osweiler at this point. There are quarterbacks in the draft, but you're drafting number 31 by that point. A lot of the good quarterbacks could be gone, especially with a lot of the big, you know, some of the bigger teams in need of quarterback, whether they're going to play in the first season or not. What are you thinking about with Osweiler? They're not talking about it right now, apparently, and just to be so they can be fair to Peyton Manning. There's people obviously talking about where he could wind up if he doesn't get signed with the Broncos. What do you think they're doing here?
Like you said, they're being fair to Peyton Manning. And also, they're kind of looking at things and evaluating Osweiler. They're probably, you know, reviewing all his games and going over what the coaches see, how they feel about him, and really weighing their options. Because, you know, right now, this is the perfect opportunity for them to move on if they feel like he's not their future. Personally, I don't know if I believe that. I think the guy proved enough, and I think the guy proved that he deserves to have a full season as a starting quarterback and to get an opportunity to be that. Now, they may have other plans, and they may be, you know, willing to take a risk on a guy like RG3, like you guys were talking about earlier, but I think that's what's going on with the coaches. Not only are they being respectful to Manning and letting him retire before they start getting into this whole quarterback debate, but I think that they're really just weighing their options.
Yeah, I don't really see Denver going after a Kaepernick or an RG3, to be honest. Their cap room is not that amazing, especially with some of the defensive holes that they're going to have to re-sign. And as Steven did mention, they do have some offensive line issues that they want to address. So, honestly, I think as long as Brock Osweiler doesn't get a big head by some of these other teams approaching him as part of joining their team and is going to start asking for a ridiculous contract, I think Denver would like to keep Osweiler as their quarterback. You know, he can manage a team. He showed that he can handle the pressure for the most part. Got a good year of experience, got to see the field quite a bit. So if he can somehow have, is he averaging a little bit under 900,000? So you give him, let's say, $2 million a year over 3-4 years. If he would be okay with that, absolutely. I think they would jump all over that and allow all that space to kind of be focused on the defense, where they have shown that that is how their team is going to win championships, is through that side of the ball. So I really think that they want to stay in the lower pay grade for their quarterbacks, and I think Brock might fit that bill.
Well, I mean, that's all well and good in theory, but we'll have to see if that actually winds up being what happens for Oswald. I mean, definitely he deserves to ask for some money, but I think he can't ask for too much because you got to remember you got benched in the playoffs. You know, you didn't play when the games mattered the most. And, you know, at the end of the day, that's what they're going to be looking at, too. You didn't, if you had been the quarterback that had led them all the way to the playoffs, then you could definitely ask for some big money. But you got benched when the games mattered the most. So, you know, that's going to take away a little bit from what he can ask. And I think Brock won't be asking a ton. I think he's going to be fair about it, but we'll see, because, again, we had the big elephant in the room of how is Von Miller going to take getting franchise tagged? You know it's going to happen. There's not a whole lot he can do with it. I mean, you know, we know how the franchise tag pretty much works. I mean, do you see what Steven said, where he kind of just accepts that it's going to happen and he plays this 1 year under that tag? And or do you think he will be a little bit of a diva about it, knowing how well of a Super Bowl and how well of a season he played?
Well, listen, Von Miller has to look at it this way. It's been mentioned before, Denver does not have a huge cap room going into the offseason. Yes, it's going to help if Peyton Manning retires, because that saves them $19 million. But even with that, it's not a ton. So their best bet is to franchise him now. And his best decision, I think, would be to franchise now, because they have a ton of money coming off the books the following year. And that's when he could really ask for that giant pay raise that he's looking for. So I think if he becomes a team player here, just accepts the franchise tag, goes out, has another just phenomenal year, he's gonna see his money. So hopefully he doesn't become a diva about it and it just focuses on the team.
What do you think, Gary?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it helps him really any to be a diva and really just get out there and complain. Just because of the fact that, you know, the team has the right to franchise him. It's not his contract not to be franchised, or you know, any of those situations that we've seen in the past from players. So it really is out of his control. But the one thing that you do think, at least if you're Von Miller, is, hey, I could bet on myself again this year. If I go out and prove to them that I am as elite as they saw me this year, there's no telling how much I'm going to be making the following year, in year 2018 or 2017, whatever, he's going to make that big payday happen for himself. And I'm looking forward to seeing him myself. But, you know, I think that, you know, once again, I mean, this is just the way things are going to fall into place. I don't feel like this guy is going to be an issue. I think he's just going to go with it and try his best to make sure that he gives his team an opportunity to get a repeat.
Yeah, I mean, so we kind of got that out of the way. Now we need to look at some of the other players that they obviously, and I mentioned some of them, you know, the tussle that they're going to have with the linebacker spot and inside linebacker with these. I mean, Danny Trevathan is a guy that made a lot of big plays for them. He was vital in going into pass coverage as well. Brandon Marshall, another guy that they kind of switched around with Trevathan. They both sort of make the same amount of money. So, I mean, you wouldn't be, and one of them is Danny Trevathan is unrestricted and Brandon Marshall is restricted. So that means that whatever, you know, if a team comes and offers Brandon Marshall money, they can offer the same and see if they want to match it. And do you kind of go with, what Steven was saying? You go with Danny Trevathan if you got to pick one, or do you try to sign, or do you go for both?
Yeah, I think you go for both. I think you go for Trevathan first, just because he is unrestricted, and see what kind of offers go out for Marshall. I think if the offers get too high for Marshall, they're okay with letting him go. But I really think that they want to keep their young core on this defense together. And their defense is put together so well. They have some veteran players in there, along with some of these young guys. Both Marshall and Trevathan are young talent that could really solidify the defense for years. But if they're unable to keep both, I would go Trevathan as well.
Yeah, I think we're all on board on that, at least from what I'm hearing. And Trevathan is just such a great talent. He's got something special. And I think Brandon Marshall does too, to an extent. But I think he's one of the guys you could say we could probably find another Brandon Marshall, if it's not in the draft and free agency somewhere, maybe a veteran that, you know, isn't really in his prime and is kind of winding down, but still valuable to the team. You can always do that and fill that need. But right now, Trevathan is the guy, and you've got to make sure you get him back on this roster and make sure you get him, back in the mix, because losing a guy like that could definitely take your defense down to a different level that you don't want to see.
So, you know, the other kind of glaring thing on the defense is Malik Jackson, who was, you know, he's an unrestricted free agent. He was a big key for them up the middle, kind of being that force that stopped the run and also helped, you know, rush the quarterback and everything. Steven took it as a guy that they can let go. Do you agree there, or is he one of your big guys you got to go find, because you also need some offensive line help, obviously, and you might have a couple of guys that you might want to keep on the offensive side, or you can go offensive line in the draft and try to go all defense and keeping them?
I actually kind of disagree with him. I think Jackson's a huge part of their future plans. Again, you know, the defense was such a huge role in these playoffs, and Von Miller and DeMarcus Ware got most of the credit. But that inside of that line, especially Malik Jackson against Carolina, completely closed in Cam Newton. I mean, sure, he doesn't get all the sacks, he doesn't get all the flashy plays on the defensive line, but he plays a huge role, and he did extremely well. So he's another one of those players that Denver is secretly just hoping Peyton Manning just retires so they get that cap room back, so they can use some of that money to keep Jackson on board.
Yeah, you know, and you're right, Randy. I think this guy is a very valuable piece of this defense. I think the other thing, you know, when you're in the front office and you're looking at things, you're evaluating each piece, and when you're limited on that salary cap and you may still have that money coming from Peyton, you're not guaranteed to get all the contract deals that you want. You're not guaranteed to have everything fall into place just like you expect. So I think that there could be a situation where we do see them losing him only because of the value of their placing on other positions like offensive line, quarterback, maybe even running back, which, you know, to me, that would be the later one. That would be definitely be lower than Malik Jackson here. Malik Jackson gets on my roster before Hillman or C.J. Anderson do. So I think it's very interesting. It just depends on how that front office looks at it. But this guy is a value. He's a guy that any team in this league would love to have and mix in their front, you know. So, you know, maybe the Broncos try to find a way to keep him. If it's my opinion, I agree with Randy. You keep him. But he could be a guy they have to say, sorry, we've got other needs that are more important.
So you just mentioned that, Gary. I think we know who we're going with here, but does C.J. Anderson really deserve a big payday?
You know, they looked at Monty Ball in this aspect of, does he deserve a payday? We've seen other guys, you know, at least in the running back position. And it just seems like in this generation of running backs, they're just not as valuable as they once were. Most teams look at them as, you know, guys that are very short term. They're not going to last a long time. So just move on. Get the next guy. Find fresh legs. That's what they always look at with these guys, despite the fact that maybe, you know, they have great ability. They have things that are working for them. So, I mean, does C.J. Anderson deserve a contract? I think he does. Does he deserve a gigantic contract that's just out of this world? No. To me, he's a upper level running back, but not an elite running back. And I think that, you know, he's a guy that I even feel like the Broncos could probably lose and pick up another guy and probably be okay.
Yeah, if you're picking between Hillman and Anderson, I'm definitely going with Anderson. But he didn't do anything this year that made me go, he could take the ball and be your main running back. I mean, he's a running back by committee type runner. He's nothing flashy. He's nothing like over the top. I think, especially as fantasy players, Gary, we saw the rise of C.J. Anderson in the offseason, where all of a sudden people were picking him in the top 4 or 5, and he was one of the big busts. But that's just kind of where he is. He's a decent running back, but he's not going to be that amazing player. And running backs these days, there's your 3 or 4 amazing running backs and then everyone else. And then once you get past those 3 or 4, it's like, okay, we just need 2 or 3 of these guys and mix and match them, and we'll be just fine. So I think Denver is ready to part ways with Hillman, and if C.J. Anderson's price gets too high, I don't think they would be that upset if they end up losing him either.
Yeah, I think I kind of agree with you guys on the whole. Definitely you're going to go try to grab C.J. Anderson, but I think he's going to try to go after some money, and he probably won't wind up getting it from the Broncos. They're obviously going to try to re-sign him. He was one of their much more explosive guys. He helped them a lot in the Super Bowl and in the playoffs, be able to guy that kind of takes the ball, gets you those first downs that you need. Hillman was, as you know, Steven pointed out, he was a good guy that could kind of come in and change a pace or whatever, but he's not a dire guy that you need to keep around. I mean, C.J. Anderson was making a little bit under $500,000, so he's going to probably get up there in asking for money, and you have to wonder if that's somebody that, you know, that they're going to want to go after or not, because Denver's picking last in a lot of these in almost all these rounds that they're in because they won the Super Bowl. And will those running backs be there when you're I mean, if you go with a running back in the first round, you'll get one. But if you go out of the first round, by the time you get to that end of the second round, will the ones that are still pretty good or one of the, you know, big ones be there? You know, that's the thing. But also, Denver's really good about finding one of those third or fourth, fifth round running backs and making them into somebody. So, to me, I kind of look at it, and like Gary said, you can kind of let him go if it's out of your range. To me, I think Evan Mathis is a guy, even though he was already getting around the $3 million mark, he's somebody you kind of need to look at. He was probably one of their best linemen at the guard spot. If you want to keep him, you've got Ryan Harris too, so they've got some things that they got to sort out as far as the offensive line, which is one of their needs, definitely, that they had a problem with this season. Do you guys think they need to re-sign one of them, or do you just go all draft with this?
I think, you know, it'd be a good idea to try to re-sign these guys that, like Mathis, just because they're with your system, they know it. And I think that, you know, the talent that they have is still there. You're still going to have some upside with these guys. You know, but, you know, once again, it comes down to the front office decisions and what they find valuable. And you definitely want more talent. So why lose talent? I think you keep the guys you got and try to build on that. That's the best way to go. And, you know, that also gives your team an opportunity to not completely have to rebuild your offensive line and start from square one. At least if you retain a couple of guys, you're still working with a group that people know, and then you just add in a couple of pieces.
Yeah, I definitely think you try to re-sign as many as you can. Money is tight there. But you try to keep some veterans around, and even if you are able to get most of them back, I do think their main goal in the draft is to get young guys, and so that the drop-off is not so fast when they do end up losing these guys on the offensive line. That's the tricky part, and especially as a Jets fan, they're going to be going through the same thing where the offensive line is really good, but now it's about that time you need to go out and start looking for the young rookies and getting them trained up, so then when the talent starts falling off, you can just replace them and continue going. So it's going to be a interesting seesaw battle with Denver. Is who are they going to be able to keep around? Are they going to be able to keep around any of them? How much of a down or a drop off are they going to have next year on the offensive line?
And, you know, the early mock drafts do have them taking offensive linemen. You know, Vidal Alexander from LSU, the offensive guard. Sean Coleman, the offensive tackle from Auburn. Some people even think they might take Derrick Henry down there if he's there. So, you know, the options obviously there for those. I think you do definitely go offense in that first round if you're Denver, because you do have the defensive studs that are kind of all taken care of except for some of the guys that we mentioned already. What do you think? Do you go offensive line or running back there, or what do you think?
Yeah, I go 99% offensive line, and then maybe a running back if one of the top guys just tumbles down the draft and falls to you.
Yeah, I totally agree. You know, offensive linemen are a lot harder to find than running backs.
And just to – is Miller considered a D-end, or is he considered a linebacker?
Kind of depends on his system. I look at him more of a linebacker than a DB.
Well, if he gets franchise tagged, he's going to make $14 million. So that is the going rate for linebackers at the franchise tag. If they consider him a defensive end, he's going to get $15.4 million. So he'll be getting a good chunk of change if they go on with the franchise tag and they don't figure out some other kind of deal for him. So I think we kind of covered everything with the Broncos. The one with Christopher Hill here with the Raiders is a little bit longer. It's around 17 minutes or so. But we'll get through it, and then we'll be back to kind of give our comments on it. So here we go. Okay, here we go. Doing the second part of tonight's podcast. We already did the Denver Broncos with Mr. Stephen Davis, and now we're doing the Oakland Raiders. And here with me today is somebody you also may have heard on that same podcast Stephen was on, Mr. Christopher Hale. How are you doing today?
Good, good. How's it going?
Just trying to get through this thing.
Yeah right.
So, you know, like, tell me in just in a couple minutes or so, like, how you think the season went last year and what you're most excited about kind of looking at the team and seeing their potential for next year.
First of all, I congratulate Mr. Stephen Davis on his, team winning the Super Bowl. It's great. Hopefully someday I can say that too soon before I'm dead anyway. I think the Raiders, and this is not speaking as a fan, well, maybe a little bit, but I think we're going to be one of the most exciting teams in the upcoming couple seasons. I think we have a solid young core. This past season, it about equaled my expectations. I think if we look back on the preview show back we did in like August, I think I predicted like a 7-9, 6-10, and so that's exactly where we were, 7-9. I was totally happy with 7-9. We got a young team. Derek Carr, I think, is going to – he's already proving himself in the second year in the league as being one of the top quarterbacks in the NFL at such a young age. Latavius Murray quietly, very, very quietly, led the AFC in rushing. We got, of course, Amari Cooper. We all know his playmaking ability is just there already. He's just going to get better and better and better. Crabtree seems to have a resurgence. Our defensive line, of course, with Khalil Mack, first player ever in the history of the NFL to be selected All-Pro at two different positions, DN and outside linebacker. I just think we have the pieces there. I think just a couple games didn't go our way. The Bears game in particular that I can remember being a game that I feel like we could have been like 3 or 4 games above 500 and really set momentum for the rest of the season. We lost that game by a field goal, which is a really sloppy play. A couple of games. I mean, the first time we met the Broncos in Oakland, Woodson picked off Manning twice. We had that game and just a late pick six killed it. Derek Carr, he still has some learning curve he has to go through, like every quarterback does. He's the second year in the league. There are people calling for him to be, like, benched and all this stuff. And I was just like, just keep scrolling.
Yeah, exactly. what are you talking about?
Right, we lost a couple of games, and there are people calling for him to be benched and go with Matt McGloin, and I was just like, you guys are just nuts. So, but yeah, I think next year, and if not, definitely in 2 years, we will be an AFC West winning team, playoff bound, at least 10 or 11 wins. I think we'll be back to the good Raiders again. We're not in the gutter anymore.
So looking at going into the offseason now, looking at your team and looking at who is going to be in free agency And then just what do you think are your biggest needs for your team?
I mean, I think anybody that has followed the Raiders even remotely knows that we need a solid outside pass defense. We need a corner, safety. The Raiders want a basic 4-3 defense with single man coverage most of the time. So we rely a lot on our corners and safeties to make plays, and if we don't have those guys there, you know, I mean, Charles Woodson absolutely played above and beyond his expectations. I feel like this past season, there are some guys, Nico Thorpe, let's say he's coming up. I feel like, his name's eluding me now. DJ Hayden got better as the season went on. He needs to really come out next year, because I think next year's a contract year for him. There's another guy. I can't think of his name right now. He's a rookie. He really came out in the end of the season. Did a great job. Definitely, I think corner safety is our biggest need. I feel like our defensive line is good. Of course, we have Mario Edwards Jr. We got what's his name from the Cardinals a couple years ago? I forget his name, but got a good interior defensive line. We were decent against the run, just the pass killed us. I feel like we might need like a really athletic, maybe another outside linebacker, get Alden Smith back next year. I think after he serves his suspension, I think we'll be in decent shape as far as defense goes. Offensive line, I think, is another thing. We could use a good blindside tackle. You know, just give Derek Carr some time. They did an excellent job. They were leading the league in sacks allowed last year for a while. They finished top five, definitely. So, I mean, the offensive line is good, but I feel like he just needs more time, especially as a growing quarterback, to make those decisions, get the ball out. And other than that, I feel like we're really in the driver's seat as far as our own destiny goes.
And you're right about that. I mean, you look at this team, and, you know, the next question I'm going to ask you is about guys you need to re-sign. And other than, obviously, you know, you losing Justin Tuck and Charles Woodson to retirement, you have almost everybody else is kind of already signed up. I mean, some of the, you know, you obviously got to re-sign one of these safeties. You got all your safeties out either restricted or unrestricted free agents. Allen's the guy making the most money.
Yeah, and we released him last week to literally sign him back 3 days later. And this is just the genius of our team athletic guy. I forget his name now. I'm just blanking on his name.
The front office.
Yeah, I'm totally blanking on his name. Reggie McKenzie. Absolute genius of him. He's built the team from the ground up. When he took the team over, they had no draft picks, first round draft picks for like 3 years because of, you know, the terrible ones. I mean, back when D'Angelo Williams was still there, and D'Angelo Hall was still there. This is years ago. I mean, we gave like two years of first round picks for him. Carson Palmer would get a first round picks for him. So finally, when Reggie had his first season with picks, I mean, you saw what happened. We ended up with Cleo Mack. We ended up with Mario Edwards in the second round. We ended up with the next year, we ended up with Amari Cooper. We ended up with Derek Carr. We ended up with all these guys, and you could tell he's building a core that's going to be, that, you know, he did it in Green Bay. He's going to do it here. There's like, it's a genius of what he's doing, and we re-signed Nate Allen 2 days ago pretty much to give him out of the guaranteed money he was owed so we can restructure his contract and give him next to nothing so we clear up even more free cap space, which we have the most in the league this year. So we can really go out and spend some money and find some good free agents, corners and safeties. Then there are plenty out there.
So you would say, well, you already got Nate Allen back, so you'd say you don't necessarily need to bring back Taylor Mays or Nico Thorpe or any of these guys?
If it were me, I mean, I'd bring back Nico Thorpe. I see more outside Nico than I do Taylor Mays. I feel like Taylor Mays, he's a real situational player. Nico Thorpe, I saw some big improvements with him last year. I think he was with the team last year as well, or 2 years ago as well. I see some good improvements in him. Taylor Mays is one of those guys where he either played really, really well a couple games, or he just didn't show up. And I feel like this is a Raiders team where I think Reggie's got to start thinking kind of win now, soon, and we can't have guys not show up. There's a lot of free agent safeties and corners out there. George Aloka from the Bengals is out there. Prince Amukamara from the Giants. Derek Weddle from the Chargers. I mean, there's plenty of guys out there that we can play. We can pay the money, and they would play. I mean, outstanding football every week and give us wins.
I think the other thing I'm looking at here is a lot of your receivers are also going to be some kind of free agent.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure you could probably get Seth Roberts back, who is probably your best receiver outside of, you know, your best, you know, third receiver, which is what all these guys are. You got Crabtree.
And Cooper signed.
Yeah. But
yeah. I feel like as far as Seth Roberts go, he will get re-signed, no problem. He more than earned his money last year. He's definitely our best third option. I forget the other guy's name.
You got Streeter, you got Andre Holmes, and Jeremy Ross.
Yeah, Rod Streeter. Yeah, Andre Holmes. Andre Holmes is okay. Rod Streeter is a guy that's been injured a lot in the last couple of years. I feel like he's gone. Honestly, I mean, receivers are one of those things where it's like they're almost a dime a dozen, really.
Right.
We got our base. I think we have Cooper, we have Crabtree, we have those two guys that can really spread out the field on either side. I really think that as far as the third guy, I think Seth Roberts gives us that speed down the field and the good hands that he has. I mean, I feel like Rod Streeter and Andre Holmes, they're kind of, you know, they're definitely, you know, collateral damage at this point. If they need to go, then they need to go. I'm sure they can make some other team very, very happy.
I think now with you said you got Mario Edwards, but you've got, you know, the problem with Aldon Smith not being there till really late in the season. You know, you're losing Justin Tuck. You've got, like, three other DNs here. Yeah. I mean, they're restricted, so you could probably sign them again, but that's right. You got some holes there. And offensive line seems to kind of be something that you've
offensive
got a couple
line
guys.
Offensive line is interesting. It played well this past season, which is, you know, interesting that we've been talking about our offensive line, saying, oh, we need to rebuild it. But Donald Penn doesn't look like he's coming back. He played really well in the beginning of the season. As the season wore on, he just seemed to really just kind of make stupid mental mistakes and let guys buy him and just make some really dumb plays. A lot of false starts. I feel like our center, Rodney Hudson, is one of the best players, one of the top 10 best players on our team. The guy can block down the field anywhere. Case in point, if you watch the Chargers game when we were in San Diego, Rodney Hudson was making blocks for Cooper 20 yards down the field on a screenplay for Amari Cooper touchdown. I mean, the guy's just amazing. It seems like him and Carr have a really good rapport with each other, which is very important, obviously, with center and a QB. We got Jarvis Webb. And I just feel like we could probably definitely use some guards and tackles. I feel like at center, we're definitely good. I mean, like I said, we didn't have a terrible offensive line last year. They let, you know, some of the fewest sacks allowed. Derek Carr was almost never touched. But I think they're getting a little old. And Donald Penn showed his age last year towards the end of the season. I think we just got to, you know, we're young everywhere else. I feel like that we need to get younger there, too, as well.
Well, I mean, that's definitely something you'd say when you're looking at the draft. Have you kind of looked at anybody at all as far as...
I haven't gotten to that point yet looking at people. I've seen some mock drafts. And I mean, the first thing that goes through my mind would be getting a safety or a corner. But I mean, they're looking at like an offensive tackle. I want to say he was out of Michigan State. I forget his name right now, but I mean, I just saw a couple of them, and you all know how mock drafts are. They're here today, gone tomorrow.
Right, exactly.
So, I mean, a lot of the big guys like Mel Kiper and, you know, all those guys are looking at offensive line for us. We pick, like, right in the middle, kind of, like, I think we're, like, 12 or 13, 14, somewhere in there. If we really see somebody that we really like, as far as the offensive line goes, we're afraid someone could take them. I mean, we have plenty of, you know, depth at certain positions to maybe trade up or trade down or whatever we seem to do. We have that middle room in the middle. But I feel like, honestly, if we were going to go first round, I would probably go for a solid offensive lineman, probably a tackle, just give Derek Carr that blindside protection on the left side. Then probably in the second round, you can probably gamble and get a nice D-tackle. And then maybe in the later rounds, you can go for a corner or safety. Because I think the corner and safety are coming from the free agency market.
All right. Fair enough. Well, I think that kind of covered our off-season look at the Raiders. We'll be kind of doing this thing again after the draft to kind of get everybody's thoughts on what they thought, how the team did and everything. So we'll be sure talking to you then. And, of course, you know, as the season starts building closer to its start and everything. Thank you, Chris Herr, for being on here with us.
Anytime, man. I'm always down to talk some Raiders. It's, you know, there's very few of us up here in cold, windy, and nasty Vermont, so.
Well, you take care, man, and we'll be talking to you.
All right, buddy. Appreciate it. Thanks.
Later. All right. Well, that was your take from Christopher Hill on the Raiders. I mean, Derek Carr can only really get better at this point, right? I mean, are we worried a little bit about the interceptions and all that was happening a lot towards the end of the season, or do you think that gets fixed in this offseason and he just gets better?
Yeah, I think he just gets better. I mean, that's a young quarterback for you trying to do too much. It's the same as I was saying earlier with Blake Bortles. It's just something that they'll learn to kind of bring it back a little bit, rein themselves in, realize that they can trust their defense. If a play doesn't work the way they want it to, and you know the hole is too small, they can tuck it in or throw it away and move on to the next drive and allow the defense to give them the ball back, not try to force it, turn the ball over, and give themselves bad position. So Carr is only going to get better, and so is Oakland, really.
Yeah, I mean, not only that, I mean, the more experience he has, the more time he has in this system, just the comfort level is just going to explode. And this guy's eventually going to get into that frame of, you know, just being able to go through the motions, make sure he makes the right decisions. And I think it's going to happen. I think this is a smart quarterback. He's one of my tops, at least in potential. I think this guy is going to be one of the elite quarterbacks in this league one day. I really, really feel like that, and I think that's also why the Raiders have a lot of upside. So, I mean, there's a lot of good things here when it comes just to Derek Carr.
Yeah, I mean, looking at the Raiders, they have almost $77 million in cap space. Which is crazy. One of the biggest teams, or one of the teams that have the most cap space going in the next season, and they have almost all of their key offensive guys signed, and a lot of their defensive guys pretty much signed too. I mean, they've got some holes, but it's very minimal, and this is a great, you know, job by Reggie McKenzie and everybody else involved to just make sure you've got your big guys signed up here, and I think you got to give him some credit for that.
Yeah, especially in this salary cap era, that it really affects teams. It affects, let's be honest, the championship games. You know, every year we're looking at maybe a little bit of change here and there. And, you know, besides a couple teams in this league, really, there's these teams coming out of nowhere. Carolina this year, Arizona almost made it. teams that we really weren't talking about the year before, besides maybe Arizona. So, that's a great job of this Raiders front office, making sure they do some of the things that they need to do, and that's lock up some of these young guys and get everyone ready for, a great time in free agency, hopefully, for them, because I think they have a lot of leeway here compared to a lot of these other teams in the league.
And I think you completely agree with what he said about the team being one of those sneaky teams that we're looking at in the next couple seasons about, like, just – you've got your core guys, your Amari Coopers, your Michael Crabtree, who has significantly improved under Carr. You've got your Latavius Murray is who's signed. What you're looking at that you're missing here is your third and fourth receivers, guys you can get in the draft, whatever. But Seth Roberts was not making a whole lot of money last year. He's probably gonna get a few nice offers. I wouldn't say anything, hefty. He is a restricted free agent too, so I can definitely see the Raiders trying to re-sign him again because he had a nice rapport with Derek Carr, but he wouldn't be somebody that's big time if you lose him, and especially the other guys, like a Rod Streeter or Andre Holmes either.
Yeah, I totally agree. I totally agree with you on that, and that's the awesome thing for Derek Carr. His 1 and 2 receivers are there, so there's no worries there. And the rest of these guys, let's just say for some reason, someone offers Seth Roberts a little bit more money, maybe a little bit more than the Raiders really want to pay for him. It's not a big deal. Yes, it's going to kind of suck because Derek Carr had some good rapport with him. The chemistry was there. But still, that third, that fourth spot can be filled in free agency. Heck, the draft is going to be readily available with some receivers. I think they can make a lot of impact in this league. So I think the Raiders are going to be okay with there. You said, already talked about it, Latavius Murray's locked up. So besides those key positions, really the offensive line, it's going to be a luxury for them to add some more guys. He talked a lot about taking up and making sure you fill that left tackle side. That's totally the right way to go, if you ask me. I think really this team is really going to have to be focused on defense compared to the offense, because the offense seems to be pretty well set, but the defense is going to be the key.
Yeah, and then, like I said, they've got all that. I mean, Nate Allen got re-signed, but you've got a Taylor Mays, Nico Thorpe. You've got a few other guys that are there for you on the safety corner side, Randy. I mean, anybody that sort of jumps out at you, or you just go full-on draft here with these guys, with the loss of Charles Woodson, obviously, who was a starter for you?
Yeah, I think you definitely, that's their main goal is to get cornerbacks, whether they get some of the veteran guys or through the draft or both. I mean, as you mentioned, they have a ton a cap space, so I think they're going to be throwing money around. Obviously, I think, they re-signed Derek Carr, give him a raise, and maybe a few other players. But as far as, just a team that can throw money around, I don't see them really keeping that many people. These smaller guys, you bring up the wide receivers like Seth Roberts and Rod Streeter. Those are kind of players that you can just let go and not worry about it, and it's kind of like the running back position anymore. You can bring in other veterans to kind of fill in holes or younger players. I mean, those are mix and match all the time, but I could definitely see Oakland going out there and being big time spenders as far as secondary goes. As a Jets fan, while I was listening to him, I was looking at my team and just kind of some of the holes that they would need to fill in and people that they might cut as far as clearing up cap space. I very much see a Cromartie of the Jets or somebody like that who has a huge cap number get cut and a team like Oakland jumping all over it. So I think you're going to see Oakland not really address it right at the beginning of free agency, but kind of see how teams manage their secondary, and you're going to see some big names end up in Oakland.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you on that. I think you need to – one of the guys to look out for is their punter. I think Chris kind of told me off-air that Marquette King is kind of – he thinks is going to be one of the up-and-coming punters. So, it's not somebody like it's not a big position, obviously, but it's somebody that you don't have to pay him a whole lot of money, and you can keep him, and he keeps developing, and he helps your special teams. So,
I honestly think King gets franchised, and then they work out a deal. I agree, King is one of the best punters, whether you want to say it's not a big position or not, but look at the Super Bowl. Punters are huge in that game, and King's one of the best at it. So I think they franchise him, fill out all the rest of the holes, and then with whatever money they have left, sign him for a longer deal.
You think, Gary, you going to agree on that? Or?
Yeah, I mean, even if you don't franchise him, even if you just throw some money at him, that it makes him agreeable. I mean, anything you can do. You know, it wouldn't be bad to franchise a guy, but I mean, if there's somebody else out there,
so weird, you know, to talk about franchising a player.
I know. it makes me even hesitant. But I agree with Randy. I mean, you did talk. He talked about the Super Bowl. That's completely right. I mean, the special teams is all about that. And yeah, I mean, a good punter can definitely help your team and get you to some W's that you really need. So.
What? Well, I don't see it as being that big of or like a surprise to franchise punters and kickers. Those are your cheapest positions to franchise, and so I think that's where a lot of teams go. Is like, unless you're in a situation like Denver where you're not going to be able to really afford this really huge player, or we're going to get to Chicago.
Yeah, because they got McManus that they got to figure out if they want to bring him back too, which we didn't touch on.
And they should, but. And I'm sure they will, but like, unless you're in a situation where you have a huge player that is coming up for free agency and you're not sure if you're going to be able to re-sign him, so you slap the franchise tag to keep him there. A lot of teams actually just kind of throw their franchise tag at their kicker or punter just to lock in that position. Because it's like, well, we have it. We're not going to use it on anyone else. Let's just go and lock him up. It's not that big of a hit for the team because it's one of the lower paid positions, and then we'll deal with it when the time comes.
Yeah, if you look at the draft, they're kind of saying Jalen Smith out of Notre Dame, who's injured, he would kind of do like a Todd Gurley where he'd come in halfway through the season, and then you put in Alden Smith, who'd also kind of do the same thing if you sign him again. Depends on what they want to do with that, because obviously they could sign him for real cheap because he's not going to be helping them at all until way later in the season. But if, let's say, Khalil Mack, Mario Edwards, all of them kind of work out, and you bring in Jalen Smith, he plays well, and you got Alden Smith, it's like, wow, that's a dynamic, total dynamic core there at linebacker for your team if you go that route. I mean, that's kind of, I mean, they also got, I mean, these are really early mock drafts, so I wouldn't pay too much attention here, but Mackenzie Alexander from Clemson and Robert Ekimdichie from Mississippi, who was, he was a hell of a player over there at Ole Miss. If they can land him, that's a huge, huge get for the Raiders over there on defensive tackle. So, you know, as this, anything you guys want to say? Left on the Raiders before we kind of just mosey along here.
You know, I just, you know, we've talked about it plenty of times, but I just think this is a team on the rise, and this offseason is going to be really big for them. Not only do they have plenty of money to spend, but they've got some positions already taken care of. We just covered them all. I think that this team could definitely jump up another level if they can just all get into training camp, get their focus going, and then get going in the, you know, training camp and really working hard towards the beginning of the season. They could really be a team to contend with. And I mean, I don't, it may be weird to say this, but your Super Bowl champs may be having to fight for that division this next year really hard. I mean, they may be having not just the Chiefs to, you know, defend against.
Yeah, it's not very often that you see a team that is on the rise. They have one of the highest cap spaces in the entire league. And it's not because they have to go back and make sure that they bring everyone back. It's like, even if they don't get a single one of their free agents back, you still look at the team like, they're on the rise, they're doing okay, and they have all this money to play with, and it's just about if they can continue to make the right decisions and the smart moves. And then you tell somebody that the team that's making all these smart moves is called the Oakland Raiders.
Right. And that's not something that we normally would associate with the Raiders historically, but they are doing it, and that about wraps it up here. That wraps it up here for our first time look at the offseason. We'll continue with AFC West on Thursday. We'll see who's been franchise tagged. This, you know, it'll be Thursday night going into Friday morning, so there'll be about 3 days of tagging going on, and we'll see who's made the news and everything else. And we'll continue to look at the AFC with the Kansas City Chiefs and the San Diego Chargers. I don't have two people that I had on hand like I do for the Broncos and Raiders, so I'm going to be digging through some message boards and some Facebook pages of those teams and seeing who I can find. So who knows? It might be a funny little interview with somebody I really don't know, or it could be a great one. We'll have to see. If you're a fan of the Chargers or the Chiefs and you're listening and you feel like you can do what Steven or Christopher did, don't hesitate. Tweet at me or Randy or Gary. You know, they could pick it up here too at Football to Football. Just tweet at us. You know, make your case, and I'll gladly be there listening. If you want to state your name, or just go to the there is a Facebook group, but it's kind of not really used. Just you can email us footballtofootballpod@gmail.com there that way too, if you're not a big Twitter person, to kind of state your case if you're a Chiefs or Chargers fan and want to be having your voice heard. So, all right, until Friday.
Also, don't forget, people, we want to let everybody know that we are associated with LastWordOnSports.com. We appreciate them for, you know, working with us and having a partnership. We want to let everybody know that. And, of course, all the other places you can find us, the W2M Network as well.
Yeah, for sure. Of course, rate, review, and subscribe. That helps out more than anything on iTunes or Stitcher, and going on TuneIn Radio, going on YouTube, W2M Network on YouTube, and subscribing to that as well. That helps. And, of course, you know, we have other shows that we do as part of the WTO Network. I just did a Rest of the Max Extra with Tom Reese, going over that New Japan New Beginning and Nagata show. We talked about an hour over that. And, of course, the ROH and New Japan on a Rising Cards that will be happening on Friday and Saturday. And we also, Randy, I mean, I'm sure you're having your, this is the week, right? You have your new episode tomorrow?
Yes. Yes. It comes out tomorrow. We recorded tomorrow, actually. We're fixing a bunch of technical difficulties that we've had over the last few weeks, but we are recording and posting our new episode tomorrow, where we will be talking about a game that we co-played together, an interesting indie game called Lovers in a Dangerous Space-Time. I talk about The Order 1886, which I'm slowly getting myself through. And Wes plays through an interesting shooter back in the PlayStation days, a Siphon Filter. So I'm interested to talk about all three of those games.
All right, well, there you heard it. Make sure you check out that Backlog Busting Project episode when it comes out there. And, well, again, until Friday morning, we will see you guys later. And, you know, don't be surprised if in a couple weeks you see that the podcast is called something different. If you're a W2M, you know, Rest of the Max fan, you'll probably recognize what the name sort of looks like. We're kind of rebranding to kind of have the three main podcasts all have sort of have the same big theme here. But we'll get to that when it happens. But, well, until Friday, we'll see you guys later.